right. Well, me.
We recording?
Yes, we are.
So this is happening.
This is happening.
Okay.
All right. What up? How y'all doing, man? How y'all doing out there? This is Rap Sucks Radio with your homeboy Track Life and you folks, Kev Sakota.
Yes, yes.
And of course, we still got special guests, Audio Live in the building. He was in the building last week and he will also be in the building this week. And that's how we do. We give special guests 2 weeks. The reason why we gave Audio Live, just real quick, a second week is because, you know, I needed him to be able to get out his Laker frustrations with me. So now we can talk about other things. So. But anyway, let's go and lead into this. First question.
Fantastic. The opening question.
The opening question. Kev, man.
Yep.
And this might be a sponsorship worthy thing. Are you shaving your head to cover the gray or what?
Yes.
Just a straight up yes.
Listen, man.
Yo, wake your podcast up. I go by the name of Lil Brenna's baby boy, and you are now listening to Rap Sucks Radio with my niggas and them. Fool. Yeah.
What?
Yes, welcome back to Rap Sucks Radio.
Kev Sakota and Passive Aggressive Trek.
The problem with y'all is, as we get into Out Here Tripping.
Oh, I love every sentence that starts with the problem with
y'all. Yeah, the problem with y'all is, see, I take my L so comfortably and conveniently. I take my L. Y'all do not take your L's. When y'all get an L, that's from y'all in this room. Any of my actual friends listening. What up, Si? You listening? You don't take your L's neither. Y'all don't take your L's. You know what I'm saying? So that's, matter of fact, I'm gonna take my L now.
Okay.
Out Here Tripping, sponsored by somebody. Again, like I said, that's my suggestions. TripAdvisor, holla at me.
Yep.
I got you. I got that. You know, it's an easy sponsorship for y'all. Out Here Tripping. All right. Trek Life is Out Here Tripping. Fine.
Why?
All right. So I pride myself as a person who, you know, doesn't fall for nonsense news on the internet, that delves deep into the subject matter and knows what he's talking about.
You got Snopes bookmarked.
I got sunned. I thought that the Rihanna bought her master story was real. And the reason why I thought it was real is why I'm out here tripping. It came from a radio station. So I just thought that there should be some form of like vetting, not realizing it was like a hip hop radio station. Fine. Trek Life officially out here tripping. You know, this is, but Trek Life takes his L's when he's out here tripping. So remember that, people. When you're arguing with me and debating with me and when you're in the comment section and you don't like me or whatever, for any reason, remember, I always comfortably take my L's because I know that you know, L's are L's and I'll take them all day.
I think you're going to get a lot of disagreement to that.
But yeah.
I could be wrong.
It could be
wrong. If I am wrong, I will take the L.
Well, I mean, we'll see about that. However, Out Here Tripping, brought to y'all by somebody who's going to pay us for it. And but it does lead into a good, you know, discussion about news on the internet and, you know, falling for the okey-doke. Matter of fact, I actually fell for 2 okey-dokes. Like, I thought the initial story about Ciara getting her master's from the football player, from Russell Wilson. I thought that was real and got bodied on that too. Like, nah, dog, that's not real either. So, and
was that story that he bought them for her for her birthday or something?
Yeah, to clarify the whole story, so to clarify both stories. The initial story was that Russell Wilson bought Ciara her masters for her birthday. And I was like, you know, NFL players got bread, so it made sense to me. Although I was like, man, Ciara's masters got to be crazy expensive. And what label would really give that? That crossed my mind, but I was like, but you know, NFL players like Russell Wilson got hella bread. He probably, you know, made him an offer and they was like, yeah, it's on. But now that I think about it, as I'm worried and, you know, back into the intelligent thought, it's like, yeah, but, you know, masters are a lifetime ownership and you can pass that down to your children's children. So no label's willing to give that up. The second story that Live was asking what happened was that the story was that Rihanna bought all her masters and that she now owns her masters. And
that's a lot of masters.
That's a lot of masters. Yeah. But and we didn't even talk about golf. But the fire out there.
You
but
did that.
But yeah, it turned out that story was fake. And even that kind of was like, damn, she got bread like that to buy her masters. But yeah, I fell for it.
I thought the opposite. I thought Ciara? Eh, maybe.
Right.
Rihanna, nah, come on.
Yeah, those are big hits. those are big hit records for our music industry people. They y'all are, you know, whatever. It's, you can clown me. That's fine. I'll take it.
But yeah, you're, you know, commercial radio station website. The voice of a generation.
It's really bad. Headlines are pretty crazy, though. Like, the context of a headline is so awful in today's time. And as you guys all know, the theme of this show has consistently been internet culture, because that's basically where most of the subjects on this show will come from. And a lot of times, man, I'll read the headline versus the actual story and be like, what? You know what I'm saying? It'd just be like, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. Barack Obama eats baby. You'd be like, what? Wow. And then it's like, you know, then the story's like Barack Obama had a baby Ruth at a church. Like, it's like, what are we doing right now? Are we really, what are we trying to sell at this moment? So, but contextually, it's kind of crazy how you can have these, like, you know, dramatic stories gain such legs on the internet and just, you know, keep it moving, you know?
Yeah, well, I just hear you trying to justify falling for the okey-doke. It's all right, man. All right. You're in a safe space, dude.
Speaking of the okey-doke,
yeah,
my man. Nah, he's not really my man. Your boy, Ja Rule.
How?
After the Fyre Festival debacle.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? The Fyre Festival debacle. My man got on TMZ February, so this is 2 months ago at this point, and said he was willing to jump on Fyre Festival 2. He didn't specifically say Fyre Festival 2. He said he's going to do a great music festival.
Okay.
So he didn't, you know, Fyre Festival 2 was the headline, you know, edition. But yeah, Ja Rule's still out here trying to do music festivals, and
if at first you don't succeed.
Can you explain to me the appeal of a music festival?
I can't. We just got finished remembering a story of our first and last excursion out to Coachella. Have you actually ever been?
The
only time?
That was the only time, yeah.
So Trek and I share just a memorable, just fantastic memory and experience of jumping in the car with Cy. And it was just the three of us?
Yeah, it was just the three of us.
To drive out to Coachella, which fortunately for people in Southern California is actually a drivable distance.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Yeah, and then, but I think I was sick as a dog.
And the traffic getting in was bananas.
Right.
And yeah, we just made a U-turn and went back. Like, we were like... That is the most old head energy thing that we probably have ever done.
That was about 15 years ago.
Yeah, we were out here with old head energy way before. Yeah. But I don't understand the appeal of a music festival. And we're discussing this now kind of late in the game for the Fyre Festival argument, but early in the game for festival season, which is coming up. And I am not a dude. Matter of fact, man, the wife and I and the kids, we just went to Knott's Berry Farm. We went to the Boysenberry Festival thing. Like, we just happened to be there for it. And people were around with, like, Boysenberry color hats and T-shirts. And I was like, yo, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like,
wow.
Yeah, like, it was crazy. So, I mean, you know, festivals are nothing new, but these
was mass... that Ja Rule's festival?
It might have been. Maybe that was his jump off. They was putting boysenberry sauce on steak and all that, and I was like, really? But you know, I know why people go to them. You kind of get lost in the crowd. You do your psychedelics and you enjoy the music. I just don't. Man, it just seems crowded and crazy, and there's a Ferris wheel somewhere and a Burning Man or what. I don't know. I don't even know if those two things are connected. Like, what are we even doing? Like, I just feel hella old whenever somebody mentions going to a festival. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Well, you're supposed to. I mean, there was a time when I went out to I guess there were raves.
Okay.
But there were the raves that had, you know, it was like, it was institutionalized raves after raves were super underground and just
right.
Dance music where it was like a dance room and a hip hop room and stuff like that. And,
right.
But it was usually with a group of people that, you know, like we had a certain amount of, you know, access or whatever. We didn't have to pay to get in. So it made it a lot easier to stomach.
Cancel culture is a man with clout. Have you ever been to a rave live?
Never
been to one. Okay. We've been to quite a few parties together. And yeah, but I don't think I've ever been to a rave either. It sounds a lot like a Metro, where there was like multiple rooms, and you know what I'm saying?
Club Metro?
Club Metro. You know, Club Metro had like the hip hop room, and then and then there was just the room with the
But you could always leave the room.
You got
right.
It feels like you can't leave. It feels like you can't leave. Yeah. I'm not sold on it, but for those of y'all who don't know anything about it, which would be odd at this point in time, but some of you guys, you know, it's not greatly important to most people. So the Fyre Festival debacle was basically, was it the Bahamas that they were at?
I think so, yes.
Okay, so they...
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But Ja Rule and another business partner, his name fails me right now, the other business partner is the dude that took the blame.
Yeah, Billy McFarland.
Billy McFarland. They attempted to do a festival, a music festival, on an island. It basically became slapstick comedy at some point. There were two documentaries on it. There's one on Hulu and one on Netflix. I personally thought the one on Hulu actually gave you kind of more of Billy McFarland's side in a way. He did speak for himself, but I thought he sounded stupid. I just thought the discussion about some of the things that did actually go well. Because there were people that did actually get their little mini mansion, and there were people that actually did get some of the things that they were promised.
Right.
But most people did not. And none of the bands showed up. Can you imagine flying hours away and none of the people that you came to see show up, and you don't have a room to stay in? It just all fell apart. And Ja Rule assuming that he should be the next person to bring a music festival about is just really odd, you know?
Yeah, well, it's hilarious. So there's a couple things, and I actually thought about another connection here that we can discuss. But there's a culture, and we want to, you know, we're going to talk a lot of trash. We're going to just use the term millennial, real the term millennial real loosely, I think, generally speaking, on the podcast. And it's if you're a millennial, God bless you. You're gonna have to take a few L's while you're supposed. Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of shade. Yeah, but yeah, just there was just poor planning all around, right? From the organizer side, the people who attended, who, you know, I think it's safe to assume that if you buy into something, you buy a ticket, that you should expect to get what they say you're gonna get. That's cool. I'm a jerk because I took a little, just a slight amount of joy, I have to admit, in seeing them cry, which is very wrong. But I know I'm not the only one.
Can we address the elephant in the room, though? Which is that 51, right? 51. 51, right? 50 Cent. He won.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
because
yeah,
this is the real reason that Ja Rule is like flailing right now, is because 50 in every way, shape, and form has fully sunned this guy, and now he's flailing, right? Yeah, and that's really the elephant in the room. 50. He can't do anything because 50 has made it his personal mission to destroy you. And he has done that, right?
Ja has literally
and
become...
And that's really what it is.
50's Art of War, you know, has put Ja Rule in the situation of being the enemy who defeats himself.
But didn't he...
Which is the most joyful enemy to have in your
But
presence.
Didn't he buy, like, 200 seats in the front row? It's kind of, that this actually falls along.
No, that's one that I'm not sure. Is that actually
this falls into the category of headlines I read, but I did not read the story. So,
but guess what? That one I want it to be true, but I also don't care if it's not true, because whoever photoshopped the photo of him sitting there in a suit, you know, 50's got the bespoke suit on, sitting there in the empty front section, VIP section of Ja's show.
That is one of the funniest things I have ever seen in my life.
Fantastic.
Yeah. continuing on the subject of Fyre Festival, we've been kind of closing it out. Ja Rule, again, trying to continue this thing. First of all, it doesn't seem like, and it seems like actually these things are pretty homegrown. Like you had mentioned raves and going from, you know, being kind of the natural warehouse type thing to like an industrial thing with sponsors and label sponsors, et cetera, because I don't, you know, you just don't know when you're in a corporate environment what's really going on until it bubbles up. And then once it bubbles up, you're like, hey, how can we benefit from this? How can we put a Coca-Cola label on this? Right. How can we? So I feel like Fyre Festival started off with the Coca-Cola label on it, which might have been kind of the problem, right? Like to not be a homegrown thing where we're going to get all these influencers in and we're going to spend all this money. From what I understand, I think it kind of has to grow natural in these cases.
Well, this is what I know. Organizing any event of that magnitude anywhere is challenging. It brings some concrete, you know, logistics that you have to deal with.
Right.
If it's in your backyard, right. in some place that you know, with people that you know, that you deal with all the time. If you're going to take that offsite to an island that no one's ever done anything like this on, with a community of people who you need to lean on and who are depending on you to plan properly, that just increases the magnitude of difficulty tremendously. Agreed. The thing that the thread that I was getting to is that I also watched the Theranos documentary, right?
Not familiar with that.
So that's the company, the blood testing company that made this woman, Elizabeth Holmes, the first, I think the youngest billionaire, female billionaire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe the youngest billionaire, period. Brilliant idea. If you haven't watched it, it's on Netflix. But the idea was that you could run a full panel of blood tests for a variety of conditions with a pinprick in your finger. So the idea was that you would be able to really monitor your health and on a constant basis and a lot easier. And especially for people who for whatever reason have an aversion to needles, which most people kind of do. But I'm watching that, you know, the wife and I are watching that. I watched the Fyre thing, and the common thread is that, and this is why I brought up millennials, and I'm not sure if it's a fair comparison, but the thing is that a lot of what I see in new technology is that fake it till you make it, you know, sort of mentality, which, God bless you, you know, I definitely what we do. There's a lot of rappers who fake it till they make it. A lot of musicians in general. And you know, either they do or they don't. But the thing is that if they fail, they bear the consequences of that. Similarly, with internet companies, tech companies, if they sell somebody a dream and it doesn't work, you know, a few investors might take an L or whatever, but it's not going to really, impact somebody's life negatively. They didn't know what they were getting into in advance. With Fyre, they had to house people on an island. You know, it's a very simple food and shelter things they didn't take care of. So they caught a huge L there, and then now dude has gone to jail, right? And with the Theranos chick, I mean, that's somebody's health. And well-being that you do. Right, a lot of people. So what I told my wife, I was like, she's doing the same thing that all those other people, because the company was Silicon Valley based. It's like that all these other companies are doing. The only thing is that it didn't work. She wasn't able to pull it out in the 11th hour, and she got caught.
It was funny though, man, because it was like all these billionaires were like, we trusted her. And the main kind of thread between each one of these billionaires that coughed up their money was, when we talked to her, she didn't blink.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this was kind of the through line as to why you as a billionaire who always does R&D,
right?
You always do R&D for wherever you put your money. This person just, because they didn't blink. You know what I'm saying? And I think that just highlights the difference. Like, the whole Ja Rule thing, yeah, I get it. You know what I'm saying? I think he's just struggling. But
and it also wasn't really.
You know what I'm saying? You coughed up
really
millions of dollars.
He didn't know what was going on.
Didn't blink. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And she, her whole thing to me is that they lied. They straight up fabricated pieces of information along the way that were benchmarks that they had to show their investors. They just lied. So, you know, whatever. People catch an L.
It will catch super L's.
Major.
Major L's. But it, you know what, though? There's another part in this that speaks to kind of the startup ideology and the fake it till you make it. And the presentation is actually the most important thing at this point, making it look good. And being from our background, of course, our musical background or whatever, and your particular marketing background, like knowing that the sell is visual.
Right.
The sell is majorly visual. And you know, I can think of when the .com rage started. What does it do? Like, I could think of Bitcoin right now. Like, okay, well, what? Right. What does it do? But the sell is so visual, and people are so into this visual thing that these festivals, you know, a lot of these organizations, a lot of what they're selling you is something that might happen, right. But oh my God, it looks so cool. Everything looks. Look at this material design. Like, look, man. I might never buy another new cell phone for the rest of my damn life. Like, they all work the same at some point. So it's like, what exactly are you getting? We've upgraded the camera to the point where, you know what I'm saying? So it's the design that people are selling you. It's not necessarily always an improvement on a product or actually a solid product at all. So that's what the Fyre Festival was. It was the design more than it was anything
absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And they did a killer job marketing it in advance.
Yeah,
the funny thing is that I think the people who did the Netflix documentary who were actually behind it are the ones who marketed.
Yeah.
So they sort of use that as their PR
yep.
you know, tactic to sort of shovel past the blame to Ja Rule and everybody else involved. But
it's crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a reason why you see Colonel Sanders DJing at Ultra.
That was the other thing that you had mentioned. Okay. You got to explain this one to me.
This is another thing where I was like, that cannot be that. If that's an awesome KFC commercial, but that can't be real. And evidently, I think it was somebody in a Colonel Sanders like bobblehead costume, fake DJing or whatever he or she was doing in front of a crowd of thousands of people at the Ultra Music Festival. And I did not turn the audio on at all for it, so I don't know what kind of music or what it sounded like, but that's, you know, and I'm sure they got a good amount of money for that.
Look, man.
They still couldn't pay for people to get back from the event back to the mainland.
They could not do that. They couldn't pay for people to get back. Look, dude, I tried.
This is why we turned around and drove back home.
This is that. You know what? To be honest with you, there is some truth to that, but I try to pride myself in not really smashing like young people, like being, you know, being hard on them. Like, you know, it is what it is. This is the era, right? They turn on their phone. Everything looks exciting. I can't imagine what I would be like if I was like 50. This is super old head energy. But, you know, and matter of fact, I see people my age falling for it. You know, you turn the phone on and everything looks great and wonderful. And, you know, then you show up and you're the only person in the room. I've been there before.
Sure.
I get it. But more or less, like, again, I just think the selling of image, I don't shade. Kim Kardashian falls in my Instagram model category. And I know that's, we talked about that first week, how I don't really hate Instagram models. Like, I feel like, get your bread. If you can find a way to, you know, create a platform to get your bread, this is like the first and last time we'll ever mention her name on this show. But it's only for this next point. My point here is, if someone sells you something that doesn't have any weight to it, there's no talent behind it, and you buy it, it's not on them. It's on you.
Right.
If you buy the snake oil, you can't turn around and be upset. I would actually argue that more people are making money off of you disliking them than you liking them at this point.
Yep,
you know
absolutely.
What I'm saying? You actually want to be a menace. You want to be disliked. Because then you know what I'm saying? Then people are actually following you. Like, yeah, it's going down. We've gone from a time when you didn't know that much about your heroes. You didn't know that much about
right.
the people you idolize on TV.
Right.
So you couldn't really dislike them as much.
This could
then
be a whole
find
episode.
Find out later. Yeah, it's a whole other thing. You know what? We might have saved that for another episode. You know what? I do want to jump into this thing, though.
Yeah.
Because we haven't really confirmed. Well, okay, Reebok is fighting back, so we can't confirm whether this is entirely true.
Right.
We just know that it is a story that is out there. So I'm going to try to paraphrase what was explained to me, and then you can tell me what whether I'm right about this. All right? Okay. Beyonce has a meeting with Reebok about a sponsorship, correct? Or not sponsorship.
Or a collaboration.
A collaboration. Yeah. Okay. There you go. And she gets in a room, and there's not a single black woman or black person in the room.
Or both.
Okay.
Yeah. We know very little about most of what we talk about. Just to reiterate the general premise.
I would say we know very little about this. So she track life Kevin size at Coachella. She makes a U-turn. She bounces out there's nothing in here that represents me or the people that I want to ultimately sell my product to or that I represent. So I'm out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Now, Reebok is responding by saying that that's not true, that they never had a meeting with her or that the representation isn't true.
I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not sure.
So y'all can look this up. But here's what I wanted to bring that up for, though.
Right. There's a deeper point, right, which is that the narrative of you know, a powerful woman of color who is the top entertainer,
right,
ostensibly in the world,
right,
going into a meeting and they're not being representation by, you know, folks who can speak to her experience, not only in words and in ideas, but you know, who look like me.
Are we truly seeing a transference of power here? Like, and I'm not saying we're not. I'm really genuinely asking questions because I'm noticing more and more that these types of situations are happening where there's power in the voice of a person of color and they actually do have a real legitimate influence. And usually it goes along with money, as does all power in America, right?
Right.
But it does seem like although we're constantly fighting this battle with a strugglers mentality because we're used to that. As people of color, we're like, we always attach ourselves to the struggle. My thing about Black America particularly is like, the struggles are Africa. You know what I'm saying? Like, we attach to anything that made it difficult for us to come up, and we hold on to that, and that's basically our homeland. You know what I'm saying? That's the one thing that connects us all. Are we seeing a change in that in situations like these, provided this Reebok thing is true?
I think anybody who has half a brain would hope that there's a change going on, because what I was going to say is that the narrative of that story is very succinct, and it's a great sort of example of what should be happening.
Right.
But guess what? Even if every person in that meeting, aside from Beyonce, was a white man.
Yeah.
Guess what? That's pretty much every other company in every other industry around this country. And this has nothing to do with her, right? So then it has nothing to do with her. It's really about, well, what is the representation? And you know, then you get into, you know, what are your employment practices? Are you, if you endeavor to represent America, do you look like America? Do you feel like, do you represent the politics of and the needs and the experiences of all of America? And if you don't, take that L and then try and turn it around.
And it seems like people are trying to create these kind of soft pockets where the, again, the sell is, hey, look, you know what I'm saying? Look at this multicultural family on this billboard for this product and that curly haired child that all can connect to or whatever. Yeah. And I say that as a husband, a father of multicultural. So before you guys be like, this just went a total direction and Trek was trying to shade multicultural. Listen, knock it off. But again, when you get into that back room, when you get into that back office, are those people truly representatives? Have you guys seen the I can't remember the show. It's like a battle show where they dropped the mic, where they showed the two people that wrote the rhyme.
I posted that.
Yeah, you posted that. Okay. So the two people that were writing the rhymes was like this white woman and this white man. Now, the white man is the dude that wrote the rhymes for the McDonald's commercial that I did. So it's pretty funny because I looked, I was like, yo, I know that dude. And it looks like him.
Was he in the studio, like, stage directing
and
you?
I don't want to, I'm not disparaging them, but it was a very funny studio session. Because I, look.
Did the words, I need you to sound more.
it, it, it got a little like, can you be a little more street? And I'm like, well, I was an honor student for the last, for a lot of my high school career, at least not my sophomore year. Thanks, Dad, for the ass whoopings. But towards the, you know, when I decided to get together. You
I
know,
saw that yeah. story too, yeah.
Yeah. So, again, like the people that are delivering, you create these cultures. You create these mystiques even. You create this nuance, right? Yep. It gets co-opted and then sold back to you by people that don't look like you or don't have any understanding of where you're from, right? We see this in clubs all the time. As an MC, I see this all the time. And I don't know about shows as much as I do just MCing in clubs. Sometimes... Don't stop booking me for this. But sometimes I'll look out and I'll realize that that song that's playing and that person that's rhyming in that song would never be able to be in this club. You know what I'm saying? Without being like looked at like, yo, why is he in this club? You see what I'm saying? So I think that like when Old Dirty Bastard comes on mostly. But, you know, in general, though.
That's been going on forever, though. That's. You know, and that's sort of the answer to, or part of an answer to your question, which is there a progression? Probably, yeah, a little bit. Has it gone nearly as far as it needs to go for people to actually feel like there's some equality and they have some equity in the general experience? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Two people from, or three people from California discussing this is kind of interesting too.
Because, oh, yeah, yeah.
The rest of the nation is not experiencing most of
the. And then
the
there's the pushback. There's the, you know, Cheerios commercial with a biracial kid, and it's all of a sudden it's, you know, yeah, like people are upset because you're trying to take our country away or whatever. And then on the other side of the coin, there's you know, now more like if you have a black person in a commercial, it's like, well, that's not the right type of black person for the black community, or that's not the right type of Asian person, the right type of Latin person for the Latin community, you know, because they don't look a certain way. It's like that. I guess that's all. You know, it might not be the worst dialogue to have, but you know, so that's why I think the Beyonce story is so compelling, because even if it's a complete, you know, farce or a complete hoax, it pushes a narrative that like, okay, well, be conscious of what you're doing. You know,
yeah.
In your hiring practices, you know.
It's definitely compelling. I think that whether it's true or not, she could do it, right? There's these kind of moments in kind of what happens out there in the ether where this person that has amassed this great power is in front of another entity that possesses great power. But the question is, who needs who?
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And so Reebok definitely needs her to kind of drive culture.
Yep.
Right? Beyonce wears Reeboks. I don't know how many followers she has. I know it's probably close to 100 million.
They hide crazy.
You know what I'm saying? And so it's like, who needs who? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And they definitely need her. And she could say, well, if you don't have anybody that represents me or looks like me, why would I turn around and try to get the people that do look like me or share my same value system to wear this product when the day I came to meet with you, you didn't have anybody that represented me in any way. And so whether it's true or not, I still kind of get this idea that she does possess the power to say no, well, thank you, and I'm moving on.
And that, I think, at its core is why the story is compelling, because she is that person. We know she's that person. You know, and but that also goes to if that education has to take place in that room as opposed to it being, you know, an ethos that's ingrained in the company culture, whatever the company is, you right. know, especially right. a company who's made a good amount of money partnering with African-American people.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
It's like, you
absolutely.
Know, it, you know, that speaks to how far, well, you know, we have to go.
And it kind of goes into the Nipsey Hussle discussion we had last week and what it represents to own. And owning hip-hop.
Guess
it,
who does own his own masters in life and in death?
Go ahead.
Neighborhood Nip.
Bottom line. Bottom line, his children will eat off that forever. I can, if you want to hear a really funny story, and I'm not shading due for this response. But I, a label that I worked with, I called them because I felt like, you know, there's not a lot of value to my music at this point. And I was owed some money for the music. So I said, hey, instead of paying me that money, can I just have my masters? You know what I'm saying? It's a long shot, but I felt like the label didn't seem like they truly cared about having the music anyway. It was my opinion. And, you know, we talked about it, and I said, yeah, I just want to pass that down to my kids. And he said, well, I want to pass your masters down to my kids too. I mean,
wow.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to say that to disparage if people start trying to dig and figure out. I don't think that was said in such a horrible fashion. But what was being said there was like, look, dude, we had this agreement and there was a certain amount of equity and level that I brought to this, or at least, you know, any company has a right to feel that way. And you're going to have that discussion, right? So like Live said, you sitting in that room, excuse me, and Reebok needs her far more than she needs them.
Right.
Like entirely. So when you start asking that question and you attach things like the now failed BBB company and other companies that have made the attempt, you say, yo, why don't you just have your own shoe? That would change the entire game, right?
Right.
If now it's like it's starting to be like that to me, where it's like, you know, it's starting to get to this point where all the ownership, let's go for an entire ownership. Like this podcast will never be owned by any other person, any other group of people but us, period. If we decide to sell it, the windfall by that point will be a windfall that we can turn around and be like, look, we're going to do right with a portion of this money, and then the rest of the money, I'm going to just drive my Tesla around and clown. So, like, I think that has to be the mentality. Ownership has to be the next step. It should have been a step a long time ago, but that's, and for some people, it certainly has been. I dare I say that I feel very strongly that the Asian community has done very well in ownership.
I was going to say, if Reebok pulls me in and there's a room full of Asian people, I might sell out.
I wouldn't be mad. But Beyonce wouldn't. But that was Beyonce's argument, right?
I don't know.
I mean, by description of the story, that was Beyonce's argument. That yeah. If she walked in that room and it was all black folk.
Also, yeah, by the way, if you don't do that, you're silly. If you're going to have a meeting and you don't have at least a cross section of the audience.
Right.
In the room? You're crazy.
Who am I to say, though, that all those white people in that room were not Beehive people? I can't say that. What I can say, though, is visually, if I'm in a position of power like Beyonce is in that situation, like, I love y'all. Thank y'all. I appreciate each and every one of y'all for you know, even considering me to be in this situation. But at the end of the day, if this room doesn't represent me, how could you possibly represent my product?
I think that's totally fair. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And I think that's, you know, that's why whether the story is accurate, true, or completely false, the narrative of it is the example that we should latch on to.
Absolutely. Now, and I absolutely. And I also want to add in that might be the point of the going back to the headline situation earlier, is that the narrative sometimes, when a story is false, is that the narrative actually can end up being something that is actually, you know, of greater importance. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. And I have one more related piece that we could discuss. I don't know if you guys are going to want to discuss it, but because it ties in, and I don't think we've ever actually talked about it, is, you know, one-on-one, is the De La Soul controversy from a few weeks back. Because I'm pretty sure... One, just to revisit it real quick, when Tommy Boy, the label, decided that they were going to put De La's catalog on all the streaming services, or at least Spotify, the movement was, or the story was that they were offering a very, very, like, obscenely low royalty rate from those digital streams to the artists, which, you know, De La's always been an underdog, so you know their audience is used to them being a sort of DIY group all along, and they're beloved, you know, by pretty much everyone who's ever loved hip hop.
No doubt about it.
So there started this "fuck Tommy Boy" hashtag, fuck Tommy Boy movement. you know that this label is just trying to play this group, and we should boycott Tommy Boy. I don't disagree with any of that. I was thoroughly like,
yeah, if you want to do that.
Yeah, I'm amused. I was like, oh, that's dope. You know, there's people getting behind them. But I was also feeling like, what are you even talking about? Like, because for me, my thing is that if you're a De La Soul fan, they haven't even put out a record in like 5 years. And the most recent records that they put out are actually on the streaming services. So the Tommy Boy catalog is pretty old.
And yeah, this is very old.
You know, this is old head energy saying,
saying this stuff is pretty old. Especially the songs that people are going to remember and then stream.
Right. So that's the thing is like, how much money is really being left on the table? Is, you know,
because yeah,
I love streaming music. I'm not jumping on Spotify to listen to De La at any point in time. I have it.
Right. Yeah. The only point that I really wanted to make was like in reference to the Bay situation. It's like the Chrysler 300. Right. Yep. Now, I don't know if you know guys know the situation, right? But Chrysler was like looking for something new, right? And it's this group of people that always design the cars, but they were flailing, struggling. You know, Obama just brought the auto industry back. So what they decided to do was let this African-American man that worked in the company design the car. You know what I'm saying? Because and he gave it the Bentley hood, you know, the baby Bentley, all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So it's like it's always this kind of situation where you know that you want to be on the side of the culture, but do you want to give this African American person the power to initiate this kind of change that you know you need? Right. You know what I'm saying? And that's just where this cross section of where kind of power meets a certain kind of need, and cars and shoes and all of these things is where that cross section is, you know what I'm saying? And kicks, shoes, cars, rims, all of these things, there's a certain kind of place you need to go looking for the information. And as a company, if you're not kind of implementing these kind of people within where you can go to them for some kind of education, then I think you're just doing yourself a disservice in general. You know what I'm saying? I
completely agree. 100%. Absolutely.
I agree with that as well. And I would like to throw in concerning the De La situation, it speaks to the point of ownership even further, right?
Right.
Because
their story is very unique in that the ownership of their music was there. One, they started at a time when rappers, generally speaking, you know, were recording artists like any other, and they knew much more, infinitely more about the hip hop art form and the rap music art form than they did about the music business.
Right.
You know, which is, I don't think it's certainly not an insult to anybody, and it's probably not shocking to anybody to hear anybody say that.
Right.
But they were also integral in a unique set of works. You know, if you're talking about It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, Ice Cube's first album, all the Bomb Squad stuff, Paul's Boutique, these records that sampled so heavily,
yep,
that they're never, you know, going to recoup, you know. So maybe that's why I look at it differently, is that there's this whole different sort of business history to it that I doubt Tommy Boy or any other label or the group is ever going to make money off of that record.
Well, we don't know what the future technology would be. As the technology stands, I actually agree with you. But I also think that the rap community, the hip hop community is like, look, dude, like, we want to do right by our legends, you know,
right?
Like now, like, you know, what I was, I thought that was interesting about the Prince discussion, for example, like, and Michael Jackson, when they both passed, the discussion of where the ownership of their music was, it was actually a larger discussion than I would ever have imagined it would have been, discussed by people not so close to the music industry, but, you know, people who I didn't think would even consider.
But Prince fought that fight while he was alive,
he did.
He fought it successfully.
He did.
To a large extent, right?
So. Absolutely. But it was, you know, the fact that it was even a discussion after, like, at all, was like, wow, people are really looking at it. So I think when you skip ahead to De La Now, yeah, people are like, look, man, why is this happening? One of the funniest things on any contract that I ever have read, and I can't say that I haven't signed contracts with this exact word in it, but, it would, you know, perpetuity.
Right.
It's like, you own this forever? like when you think about it, it would be fair to argue a term. The terms in which you are an active part of promoting this record. And at some point, my legend is what's carrying this record forward. And I, you know, but I do, we are actually at time. I know it's kind of wild to do that. I do want to make sure that we thank my man Audio Live. Yeah, that's my man.
In the thank you very much. Thank you very much.
His company, Grandma's House, starts to grow, we'll talk about it more. We'll actually bring him back to talk about it. But one more thing. Yo, real quick. Y'all hear that sound? Y'all want to know what it is? Well, you won't know until you sponsor us and when we open that, you know
well
what
done.
That sound is.
Nicely
you know
done.
What I'm saying? So now you don't even know what we're drinking. But if you sponsor us, everyone will know what that sound was. This is your man, Trek Life. What's up?
I one point is that this is episode 4.
4. Yeah.
In our first episode, I was looking back in the Wayback Machine, and I realized that in episode 1, I set the over-under at 3 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
We're already doing great.
Is this where you have to admit that I'm right about everything? Because you said it would take...
I said it would take more... No, I was smart about that.
You took L's. willingly took L.
Yeah.
You know what? We got to sign
you,
it.
You are not graceful.
It's absolutely ridiculous in here. It's pretty crazy. Yo, this is Rap Sucks Radio with your homeboy Trek Life and your fam Kev Sakota.
No doubt,
as he says.
Yay.
Again, shout out to my man Audio Live. Please check out rapsucksradio.com. We are, you know, changing platforms and continuing to find the right mix to deliver this to you. We will be on iTunes and other things soon. We are not currently as of this recorded episode.
We will be.
We actually might be by this time.
Yeah, we will
be. So if we are, then
review, subscribe. What else do you do with podcasts?
Comment. Argue, disagree.
Yeah, disagree.
Know, whatever.
Tell Trek when he needs to, you know.
Take an L. I'm not taking... average L's though. Yeah. Anyway, we out of here, y'all. RapSucksRadio.com. Peace. Magic Johnson's always out here tripping. I'm out.